I often think about compounding, like this idea of like saying, okay, I need to invest effort over time. It's not going to be one in a day, but I know if I start today, when I look back a year from now, I will be in an entirely different place because of the effort I started today.
You're listening to the Real Business Connections Network.
Real Business Connections Network.
Powered by Balbert Marketing, LLC. Subscribe now and check us out at realbusinessconnections.com. Enjoy the show.
Welcome, everyone, to Learn, Speak, Teach, powered by Balbert Marketing, LLC. If you love to learn, be inspired, and succeed, we're here to speak and teach. I'm your host, Ben Albert. I believe if you're not living, you're dying. If you're not growing, you're withering. And if you're not engaged, we can turn this off right now. Because we here at LST are lifelong learners. And listen, I'm not your guru. I'm an ordinary guy on a journey to learn from the experts. My goal is to host each conversation with a beginner's mindset. Learn and let the experts speak and teach their truths. Join us. Oh yeah, and don't forget to subscribe. This episode is brought to you completely free. Get some stake in the game here. My fee for the show only takes a few moments. If you gain value from the episode, personally share with a friend and explain your favorite part. Bonus points. Please leave us a review on Apple, Google Podcasts, or anywhere you listen to the show. All right, let's get started. Welcome once again to Learn, Speak, Teach on the Real Business Connections Network. I am here today with Carla Fowler. Carla, what's up? How are you?
I am doing great. It's good to be talking again.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm going to like do like a blooper reel, but for people listening at home, I totally butchered the first like quarter of this podcast. But Carla's super amazing, patient, graceful with me. You know what I'm realizing?
We all
have bad days and bad moments sometimes, don't we?
Today I suspect we're going to talk a little bit about performance science, but one of the things that I think is so important that we often miss about like high performance is high performance has tons of like bloopers and like days of bad performance that are sprinkled in all along the way. We just usually don't get to see them from, you know, the uber successful person or the uber successful company. We just don't get to see them. So like the statement of out loud, like, man, we all have like off days. We have our blooper reels is so important to say.
It is one of the previous guests, Chris Van Vliet. He is 4-time Emmy Award winning interviewer, and he kind of talked about it offline. Like he'll have 10 minutes with someone and he swings for the fences because one of three things will happen. Either he asks the perfect question, gets a great answer. It's like a quick, short soundbite. It can go viral. He can win Emmys for interviews. It's completely boring and is completely forgotten. Or he swings for the fences, strikes out, and they just don't air it.
Mm-hmm.
We only see the home runs.
Yes. And yet, one of the interesting things about the other two scenarios, and I think this happens... this comes up a lot in like decision making. Like, for example, if you're leading a company or you're leading like, you know, your team and your effort and you're trying to decide what to do. One of the interesting things that I always bring up or like to think about is this idea of when we need to ultimately decide and do something to learn something. And we all want it to turn out well. Of course we do. We want it to be the thing that gets us the Emmy or the equivalent in whatever is your line of work. But the learning of what didn't work is so important. And if we get stalled out at this like decision phase, because we're like, but I'm just so focused on this needs to be an Emmy and I want it to be an Emmy every time. It actually has a bigger negative impact than many of the that was blooper reel or that was just nothing. Moving on.
You've got to learn to do. Sometimes you'll fail. That's part of that learning experience on the journey. Mm-hmm. Well, do you know, like, scientifically why that's the case?
Well, I mean, some of it, I think, is just that if we're sitting in a room by ourselves agonizing, we're not actually getting any input from the real world about, because most things are a multiplayer game. Sometimes we think we can, like, control the universe from our, I mean, especially now that we work from home, like, in our setups, right? But usually we have to, like, someone else is involved and we need to know, like, what do they think? Or will that customer buy our product? Will this potential customer be interested in the new stuff we've developed? Will that be a selling point or just a distraction? And we can't really figure that out often on our own. So I often talk about this, like, we have to run experiments to keep, to more or less, like, keep growing and learning. And I like the format of experiments. And because actually, my background is in science, and a lot of people have asked me, like, well, what's that have to do with, like, coaching? And the truth is that a lot of doing a PhD in a biological science was actually, like, learning how to think about a problem, and particularly, like, an unstructured problem, where my whole job was to try and figure out an answer that, like, nobody knew the answer for. And so part of that is learning to have that mindset of running an experiment. So the thing about an experimental mindset is that it kind of takes some of the weight out of it, which is to say, all right, maybe it's an Emmy, maybe it's a, like, blah, boring, and maybe it's out, oh, we're cutting that. But you learn something and then you move forward and you can figure out what is the next experiment you need to run. And I think it takes the pressure off needing the right answer, because in science, that wasn't really how we thought about things. There were certain some answers that were more lucrative than others. You know, if you solve something that gives you the Nobel Prize, yeah, like, you're going to be more famous than, you know, probably what my graduate research amounted to. But you can always be learning, and the answers can always be really informative. So that's one of the ways I think about this, is this idea of, like, in life, can we run good experiments? And if you can think about a decision as, what's the experiment I want to run? I think it really frees us up to, like, have more options, to think about it with a little more openness, and move forward more quickly and with more specificity than if we're agonizing over outcomes.
So you get to move quicker, more specificity, but really being, like, open to experience. Literally, like, our every decision we make can be a science experiment. And we might have a hypothesis.
Exactly.
And if the hypothesis is incorrect, okay, let's figure out why it was incorrect, or maybe we didn't run it properly. Wow, so we get to be running experiments in almost any decision we make in life.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And some things, it's true. Like, if you're at the lunch counter, sometimes you just need to be like, I want salami. Like, yes. Whatever, I want a ham sandwich. And you need to move on, you know. But for stuff that's really important, it's probably worth, like, giving it a little more time and a little more thought to set it up and think about, like, okay, what's the experiment I want to run here?
Yeah, what's the experiment I want to run? This is an experiment, because usually I dive right into the bio, but we've been chatting enough that it's like we just went into friendly talk. For the listener that hasn't quite met you yet, Carla, she is the founder and managing director at Thaxa. As she mentioned, she's an MD and PhD in founding Thaxa. Truly incredible boutique executive coaching firm that leverages the best ideas from performance science to help leaders around the globe, leaders all across the globe. I mean, I have listeners in Nepal, which blows my mind. How long ago did you start Thaxa? Tell me a little bit about the inception.
Yeah. So I started Thaxa 10 years ago, and that was about half a year after I finished my intern year of studying general surgery at Stanford. So as my background, I came into coaching in a really different way than many people do. So I was on a pathway to study academic medicine. So I got an MD and licensed as a physician. And I also did a lot of biological research, the immune system. And so that is my background. And a lot of people ask me the question, like, how the heck did you get into executive coaching? Which is a totally reasonable question. And I think that one of the important things about how this happened is just, I think there are many moments over the course of even before that graduate training that really influenced basically a love for high performance. Like whether it was in high level sports and like multiple different sports, by the way, or academics, or even the two different kind of professional training and experiences of medical school versus like a PhD, in which those are really different. Like what makes you successful is really different in each of those fields. I loved taking on something new, finding a new challenge, and then figuring out how you could be good at it. And in my mind, I always had like really high standards. I don't, you know, it's only in a few places did I reach kind of the total pinnacle of things. But I just found that process of problem solving to be fascinating and invigorating. And so when you look at my career through that perspective, by the time I was studying general surgery, you know, I was interested in it. I love the surgeons because they are a group that really think about performance, and particularly decision-making when you don't have like, you have imperfect data. You have to literally decide if you're going to cut someone open or not. Right. And, you know, you collect as much information as time allows, but at some point in time, you have to make that decision. And to not operate is as much a decision as to operate. And I really was fascinated by how they approach owning that decision, right? Like you have to own it. And sometimes maybe it wasn't the right decision and, or it was the right decision, but it didn't turn out well, even though it was the right decision. And this is something actually Annie Duke in her book, Thinking in Bets does a really wonderful job of describing how we need to not judge the quality of a decision necessarily by whether the outcome was good or bad. So, I would say that a lot of surgical training was in decision making. And a lot of medicine, in fact, was training in how do you talk with people and really connect and talk with them about high stakes decisions about their health, like something deeply important. And so long before I was coaching, I was having these experiences of loving high performance and thinking about it, both for myself and others, deep conversations about high stakes things that matter, and thinking about that challenge of decision making when things are uncertain. And so when you pull all that together, when I realized that a path in medicine wasn't quite the right fit for me, I kind of pulled all my capabilities and interests together and said, I still want to work with people. I just want to do it outside of that system. I want to build my own practice with my own methodology because I have a point of view on this at this point. And I want to really use that to help leaders who are setting ambitious goals and are like, I need a new level, or like, this is going to take another gear from what I've used thus far. And I want to help them do that and get out of academics, like really come into the real world and help real people do this. So that is kind of was the inception 10 years ago.
I love this. And in a second, I want to talk about your specific methodology and how you've made it your own. Before that, so you made this big decision to go 10 years ago, go start Thaxa, go kind of stack all these skills and interests that you had learned to create something fresh and new. What was one of, or possibly your first experiment? When, like, what was the first move? Like, you're just like, I'm doing this by, and then you just start, like, what did that bridge look like? And what was one or a few of the experiments you had to run to start Thaxa?
Well, I think that beginnings and endings matter a lot. So as human beings, we remember beginnings and endings more than we kind of remember what happened in between. And so I'll actually start with an ending, which is sometimes you figure out that something isn't working for you, isn't right for you. And how you finish that matters. So for me, I think I was about 3/4 of the way into that first year of general surgery retraining. And, you know, if someone leaves, like the thing about surgery is like, they're not enough people to really do all the work as it is. And so if someone leaves for any reason, like just drops out of the program or even just is on sick leave or something, like everyone else has to do more work. And so for me, it was really important to let them know ahead of time so that they could fill my spot.
Yes.
So I let them know, I said, I'm finishing the year, but I'm not going to be returning. And, but I'm finishing, you know, there's a date when year one ends and year two starts. So, I let them know I finished the year. I remember it was interesting. I was, in, I think a breast surgery case, later on, and an attending commented, she's like, wow, you are really sort of curious and engaged, like for someone who's leaving. I think sometimes when we hear someone is leaving something, we assume like, oh, they're like peaced out and, you know, but how you leave matters. And so I think that's something worthwhile. So anyways, I finished the year and I caught up on sleep for about a month, maybe more.
And little sabbatical.
Yes. And then I started really kind of starting to think and map both from my own experience. So kind of using that as a lens where I would judge what I was learning and reading to start to pull together more or less like, what is the MVP process of coaching? What do I think would be involved? What do I think would be helpful? And then I actually took that and beta tested with people. So I basically acquaintances I knew who kind of fit the leadership profile of what I was, people I was designing it for. Mm-hmm. I, you know, asked if they would be willing to come test it. And so I did a number of reps of that to just understand like, what was their experience of it? Was it helpful? What was the most valuable part? Was there anything they liked or really didn't like about it? Some of it is even feasibility. So I'll give an example.
Yeah.
One of the things that I thought was really important was that probably in any coaching, but particularly for people who are like leading or growing a business or are on like deadlines with results that are required, they don't want to wait 6 months of like coaching every other week or something to feel like they're making progress. Mm-hmm. Usually by the time someone is like, okay, I think I'm going to go get a coach, they are like ready to have the results yesterday.
Let's go. Yes.
Yeah.
I wish I had the results a year ago.
Exactly. So that was one of the hypotheses that I was like, many coaching structures just kind of start 1 hour at a time. Maybe it's weekly, maybe it's every other week, but regardless, it's really hard to get a full sense of a person and like their landscape and what they're dealing with and what they want to really have the basis for coaching. It's really hard to do that in an hour. And so I was like, my first hypothesis was we should do an in-depth session to start. Mm. That is what we should do. And really, it should be pretty uninterrupted. And I think it will take us 4 hours, maybe 5 hours. And but this is a great example of you have to test whether that's feasible.
Yeah.
And I actually had to retest it when I took my practice entirely virtual in 2020, because what was feasible in person might not be feasible even on camera, right? By Zoom. And so like that was one hypothesis I had to test was number one, could we really build that momentum? Was that the way to do it? Hmm. Could people stay engaged for that long? Even if they can, and even if it was valuable, would they find it like so hard, or like if it felt like a suffer fest, then that's like not a good way to start, right? Beginnings and endings matter a lot. So anyway, so that was like one of the things I started to test. And I think that was kind of the beginning. And I got enough initial data to say, it's sort of like, before you try it on real clients, you're like, okay, I did some test piloting. This is safe for the market. Like, let's go. And so then I started. So that was kind of how things progressed in that early phase.
I like that. So there's a big chunk where we're going to go deep. We're gonna maybe unravel things that we hadn't thought about. We're gonna put together procedures. We're gonna put together a plan. Talk about integration, because you could just totally correct me if I'm wrong. I feel like you don't just do a 3, 4, 5 hour session once, and you're a changed human. I mean, there's a million seminars and motivational events where you go, and I'm not going to name anybody specific, but you go, you fist bump, you jump up and down, and then you leave, and then you wait to buy the ticket for the next one, but nothing changes.
Yes. Yeah.
How do you start? You start. I like starting with the chunk. I like starting with the full, like, washover. How do you start to integrate from there? What happens next?
Awesome. So you're totally right. And this is why, like, coaching has an ongoing process to it too. So you could think about it like you want something that catalyzes people. They've generally come in with either a pain point or a big opportunity that they're excited about. And so that's helpful, right? They've come in the door. They are personally motivated to some degree. So that catalyst session, what I have found is it produces, I would say, some more motivation because we often get to really good clarity about two things. And this is a common mistake. I actually think when people are trying to achieve a goal or trying to improve their performance, one of the things we don't often do is say what I want is, and then be pretty specific about it. Like spend some time thinking about it and really kind of describe what it is you want to have happen. And sometimes we have like a wild, vague dream, or we have a pile of stuff we think we need to do to be successful. But what we don't have is kind of this connect the dots, clear, like explicit idea of what we want. And also what's most important that actually drives you towards that. Not all the things, but just what are some of the key drivers? And so that's what we do in that session. But you're right. You have to now like take that. And so people generally are feeling like kind of a weight lifted. They feel like they have more clarity. And that has some interesting effects on its own. So I will say that people often come in and they like one common thing that people might say is, you know, I wish I were feeling more confident about something, or I wish I were better at like speaking, like clearly kind of communicating clearly. Mm-hmm. Another thing can be, I feel like I need to get my team aligned. Like I need to work on my team. Like stuff isn't, I'm trying to, you know, have us be effective, but it feels like it's not effective. And these are kind of vague things, but here's something that I've learned over the course of my practice and the feedback that I get back is that when we have mental clarity, it actually solves a lot of problems that might not on the surface seem connected. Hmm. So it's difficult to just have someone say like, be more confident. But it turns out if we know what we think and we have clarity about that, that often actually makes people feel more confident. Also makes their speaking more clear. So they appear to be better communicators. And then lastly, if you actually know where you're headed and what's most important for that with clarity, it's great. Like teams benefit tremendously from this when a leader has it. I worked with a nonprofit director who came back after that session, had shared the plan that we had pulled together that was like, what's the goal and what are the priorities with his team? And the team was like, we get it. And they were like, we also feel like we can see why we're important and we know what we own and we can see like, oh, I'm important because I do this thing. And that is where I can shine and help. And here's how that ties back to the goal. So that is just a story of like these funny secondary effects of having mental clarity to start. So, so that's like that beginning. So that is one piece of integration that starts to happen immediately. Mm. But I know your question was actually about, okay, but then Carla, what next? What next? So
let's ask a really quick follow-up. What if I feel like I don't have clarity and I just feel lost? What should my next move be? Obviously, reaching out to you is a great idea, but is there something quick and simple that can kind of start providing that clarity so I can level up and move to the next step? What would you recommend there?
Yeah. Well, I think one practice that is helpful, and it can take some time, like particularly if you're feeling very lost, but I think it is really helpful to ask yourself frequently the question. And you can even sit down with a very like unintimidating post-it pad. Like, I mean, some people love journaling, and if you do,
yes,
awesome. But I think also for a good number of people, like sitting down with like a fancy notebook is like the thing that will shut down all the thoughts in their brain. So it's definitely happened to me.
So doesn't have to be perfect. There's not a perfect way to do it. It doesn't have to be this sophisticated journal where you have a specific exercise. It doesn't have to be perfect. It doesn't have to be right.
No, it doesn't. But asking, what do you want? And here's something that might happen. So I'm just going to, because I think there might be a follow-up question about this, sure, which is like, well, like one of the reasons I think we don't ask ourselves this question is we like shut it down before we even get started, because we might think like, well, I don't think I have control over getting what I want. And so I think one of the reasons we don't ask is because of a sense of like, well, I don't have the agency to get that. And so it would just be a demoralizing thought exercise to actually acknowledge what I might want. Or sometimes it's, I don't think that's feasible. Like, I think that is totally like a, yeah, that'd be great, but like in some other lifetime and universe. And, but the truth is, I think we have not control, but we have a lot more influence than we think. So like, I often say we think it's probably 10% influence and 90% not influence. And I would say it's closer to 90% we can influence things, and 10%, yeah, like there's a lot of luck involved, but I think we have influence, but we can't start to influence things until we actually know like, well, what would we want? How would you want to influence it? So I think that first step, and so one of the ways you can get around this is just to ask yourself the magic wand question. So just like for the moment, be like, I have a magic wand. I can wave it. I can overcome any obstacle. What would I want? And then I like to ask the question, what would be, if I got that, like, what would be awesome about that? And also, actually, what would not be awesome about that? Like, can I think of things that maybe actually might not be great about that? And it's just to like balance, if you have a magic wand, like, and can have everything. But it's just to sort of stress test that idea. Another way to look at it is to say, well, what do I think I should want? Because I think another thing that happens is we say we want something, but it's kind of a piece of us that's responding to social pressure or social mimicry, which is kind of programmed as humans to really mimic each other, to want to be a part of things socially. And so that's another question I often ask. You can ask yourself, but I do ask people that question.
Yeah.
And you can ask yourself that question.
These are good things to ask yourself, because and I love Simon Sinek, and everyone says start with why. And when you're talking about a business messaging, like a marketing message, it might make sense to start with the big vision, the why. But I feel like first you need to personally understand your what before you can even develop your why. And what I'm hearing is if you figure out what it is you want, then you can figure out why you want it. But let's figure out what first, then we can move into why and how. But so ask myself that question, what do I want? And go for stupid and ultimately journal about it and see what it is I actually want. Not what other people think I should want per se, but what I actually want, correct?
Yes, totally. And you can then follow it up with, okay, and why do I think I want that? And right. So you often want to look and see if there's cohesion between the two things. And if there's not cohesion, that's a really interesting like follow-up thing to just be like, why is that? Why is my why different from my what? Do I need to change the what? Or is the why actually not the most important why? Like, is there a different why? So, yeah.
Interesting. So we've journaled out, we know what we, and a lot of us already kind of have, I know personally, and I didn't realize it in the past, I already kind of knew what I wanted. In most cases, I feel like we do know. So we take a moment to really reflect, maybe sit in silence, figure out what that what is. Now, what do we do?
So I think the next best thing, and again, you can do it on a post-it.
Yes. I'm going to have to get, I have a pad right here, so.
Oh, awesome. I like to ask the question to say like, okay, what is most important for that? And that's the question. Now, when I'm talking with people about this, I often ask a lot of different kinds of questions that get at that. And so, for example, sometimes it's like, wow, what do I think is like the biggest driver? Like, what do I know about? So you could even be like, what do I know about this thing I want to accomplish? Whether it's like, I want to get better at sales. Okay. Or I want a promotion in my for sales. And yeah. then to sort of start to say, okay, what do I think is most important to that? And some things you probably know off the top of your head. Like it could be, okay, well, I think I need to be demonstrating excellence in my performance. So like, what are my numbers? That's probably a piece of it. Okay. But another piece of it, you might be less clear. And I always recommend jot down everything that comes into your mind. Like set a timer, be like, I'm just going to think about this for 10 minutes. Mm. Again, you don't have to do it for like an epically long time. Just like targeted, focused 10 minutes with no distractions. Start to write down, what are all the things that might be important for me, like getting this promotion in sales? And then I like to say, all right, now you might come across things like, well, I feel like there's a lot of stuff I don't know. Then I recommend thinking, do you know anyone who has done what you want to do? Or like, can you look for examples?
Yes.
And sometimes you can go talk to them and literally be like, what was most important? What did you think was most important? Or what do you think most benefited you? You can also like call a book. It's like call a friend, but you know, there are a lot of often books that can be helpful for what you want to learn. And so you could kind of fill in some of the gaps. But the main point is not to give yourself like this huge laundry list of stuff you have to do, mm-hmm. but to once you kind of feel like you've filled it out and you have some ideas, to then pick like the three things that you think are the most important. And this is an important piece because I think most of us feel pretty overwhelmed when we're like probably already kind of busy. And then we make this like new thing or goal we want to get. And we've made this laundry list that is unending. And then we're trying to run around doing all those things. But the truth is they don't all have the same impact. And so, but a minute or an hour is an hour. And so mm-hmm. some things are worth our hour. Some things are not. And so the key last piece is to really sort of say, let me figure out what I think are the three most important things. And so that's like, that's step two. And we can talk about what you do next also with those three things. But I think even having that mental clarity about it will naturally often skew what you spend time on towards those things. Like you'll notice when they're happening more, you'll see opportunities more to do them. And so even at this stage, there is, if you have that mental clarity, there is some integration that starts to happen.
Mm, it's all about the clarity. I like you. You mentioned you see the opportunities. You also mentioned we have people around us, surrounding us that can help us. Just kind of a side story. My girlfriend's in a very high management role, and she hates when someone just comes to her with a question without any context. Like they didn't even try. And she's brilliant. She'll simply try and figure it out quickly and then have an answer, but they didn't try. So having that clarity where it's, hey, I'm doing this. You could even just blame, you know, blame someone. Hey, this Carla has me doing this exercise. I wrote down this, 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 and this, but I have a blockage here. And I know that you're an expert in this category here. Can I ask you a quick question about it? I could use your advice. People are going to be so happy to help you. But the key here for me, what I'm bringing in, is you have clarity. So when you do have an ask and you do have a question, you've already done the bits and pieces to gain that clarity to really like kind of be in a great place to hear the answer and then go implement it.
I think I agree with everything you said. And it is interesting how we perceive others. So again, sometimes people are talking about like, I want to be perceived as senior enough, or I want people to think that I have some charisma, or you know, some of these kind of ambiguous terms that are hard to know how to embody them. But I believe one of the things that makes people seem confident, seem senior enough, and that we often sort of associate like a sense of like sort of power or gravitas with are people who have clarity. Like clarity, like, well, this is different than having an opinion. it's having a clarity and a point of view that comes from some thoughtfulness, like well thought out. And so it really does present ourselves in a different way, even when we're coming with a request.
I feel like we're going through a massive program in a short interview, and I'm just like lobbing up the softball ones. Because my question is, what do I do next? So I have clarity. I've seeked help. I've read some books. I even went to the local library to check out a book. Wow, that's old fashioned, right? And I have a little bit of momentum here. Mm-hmm. But at this stage, most of us, we're not like unconsciously competent. We're still like kind of stuck in our head. We're still kind of being sciencey and trying to figure it all out. What can I do next to kind of get a little more clarity? And mm-hmm. my goal is to be consciously competent in what I'm looking to achieve. What's my next stepping stone?
So I think the next stepping stone is to actually take those things you identified. Be like, okay, I think these are my target areas. So in a broad sense, I want to spend and invest more time and thinking in these areas because I think they're going to give me a bigger impact than spending that time elsewhere. The next step, I think, is to actually say, okay, concretely, what would it look like to get started on this? Mm. Or concretely, what would it look like to, actually, there's sort of three parts, but I often look at things and say, very few things are like gained in a day, right? True. Particularly like if you're building a skill set, something that really matters, often it's not something that's like just easy or like, great, I did a 1-hour seminar and now I'm a pro. So I often think about compounding, like this idea of like saying, okay, I need to invest effort over time. It's not going to be one in a day, but I know if I start today, when I look back a year from now, I will be in an entirely different place because of the effort I started today. And so then the key question becomes, what can I do? Like, what are my opportunities to work on this on like a daily, weekly basis? You know, it depends a little what the thing is, what is the frequency, but certainly like language learning as just as an example, you know, that would be a daily thing. Yes. Exercise also kind of a daily thing. Like you can't cram that all into December. So, but it's figuring out what is that feasible chunk that you can start today that will not feel like hard in and of itself, but that is going to like start you up that curve and you start investing in it. And so for me, a big piece is to not over design those initial things. Like there is room to like up the ante. If you're like, this is easy, like I so got this, then that's awesome. But I think one of the things that happens really early is we get excited. We have like a catalyst. We have some clarity. And then we like set this really like unrealistic pace for ourselves. We get burned out in about a month or two. And then we're like, ugh, that's unsustainable. And for something to be compounding, it has to be sustainable. And so that's why I really like this saying, how do you get started? And how do you just like keep yourself going on it? And how do you get rid of like, what's going to get in the way? So that's another question I like to ask. What is going to get in the way of this small new habit or thing that you're working on? And so that is, I have this thing that I call like the 90-90-90.
Okay.
And that is like, it's like how people, when you're starting to compound and implement, right? This is like, how, like the curves of like people kind of falling off. So like 90% like of us for something, whatever it is in our lives, like don't ever start. We have the idea, but we like never get started on it. So getting started is critical. You know, we're back to beginnings and endings. So like, and starting at a level that doesn't immediately turn you off of the thing. Okay. Then once you get started, you have to just figure out how you can keep going. This isn't even thinking about improving yet. It's just how can you keep practicing? And like 90% of people who get started, like at some point it's not sustainable and they don't see results soon enough and they kind of stop. Mm. And the last 90
was the second 90 days?
It's not really about days as much as it just is like a percentile.
Got it. So 90% drop off literally immediately. Then the next stage is another 90%.
Yeah.
And now we're onto the third stage. For the one person still with us.
I know, right. Well, and so some people do like, they find a sustainable thing, they keep working on it.
Right.
But often what that looks like is like, they keep doing the same thing and they don't iterate or improve on it. So that last 90% is like, well, they kept going, but they didn't ever say, okay, well, I'm now like, let's say running my 3 miles, but maybe I need to look at, are there other ways of training that would get me off being stuck at 3 miles? Like I can run the 3 miles now and I do it every day and I'm fitter than I was, but what else might I need to do? Like maybe I need to add some weightlifting or maybe I need to do speed work. Like I've just been jogging kind of my like 10 minute mile, 3 miles. But maybe I actually need to stop running 3 miles and run a few sprints instead.
Sprints. Yeah.
I don't know, like these orthogonal or different ways of iterating and thinking about the thing you're doing. So that it isn't just you start compounding and you keep doing the same thing over and over and over again. You have to start like kind of iterating and thinking about like, okay, now that I'm really good at just doing this thing, how might I change it up to get even more benefit? And so that's a lot of how I think about, okay, once you've decided what you want to do, how can you like, you have a particular task for a particular time. When you're starting, you're just starting. Just think about how to get yourself started in a really good way. Then you got to think about, don't worry about improving yet. Just figure out how to keep going. Mm. And then it's really that last phase where it's like, once you feel really confident, you're like, nope, I'm doing this thing. I like it. I'm like comfortable with it. How can I now start to push at the edges and think about what it would look like to improve it more?
I like that because so in a lot of cases, we might not get through the end, but that's probably a good thing because if we're being a scientist and trying different things, things that aren't serving us are going to drop off. But once we figure out what that one thing is, it could be 2, 3, 4, but I'm going to focus on that one accomplishment at a time.
Yeah.
Then I can go all in with confidence that I can be successful in it.
Yeah. And like as human beings, like we are actually natural learning machines and we want to win. Like that's just a fundamental belief I have about us is like everybody wants to win. You know, we acquire different ideas or beliefs that sometimes make it seem like that's not the case. But at the end of the day, I think we like to be learning. We like to see ourselves overcome challenges and accomplish things. That feels really good. And so finding ways to do that over the course of our lifetime. Like not getting kind of mid-career and being like, all right, I know everything. I'm just going to do the stuff I'm good at now because now I'm senior enough that I can just do this stuff I'm good at. Often actually isn't a happy place for us. Like we need to be kind of like changing, like not stagnating.
I like you said, literally, it feels good. And so it's not even for that external vial. It actually feels good. This process actually feels good inside. Mm-hmm. I'm going to write this down on my post-it, be a scientist, because I need that reminder. Time flew by. A couple other things I want to write down. We're going to go rapid fire in a second, but I don't want to forget this. Okay. How do people continue to stay in touch with you and go deeper because time gets cut short? If they have further questions, where do you recommend they go?
So a couple different places. LinkedIn. I'm on LinkedIn. It's a great place to follow me. And so any conversations I'm having with other people like get posted there. And it's always a little different. Like there's so much great stuff to talk about. And so that's a fun place to learn more. And then in terms of coaching and learning more specifically about that, my website is a great resource. That's at thaxa.com, T-H-A-X-A. And there's both just stuff you can read, but also if you're interested in talking about what a potential coaching engagement would look like, you're curious about that, you can message me through the site there and we can start a conversation and set up a call to talk more about that.
It's perfect. I just wrote it down. If you're driving, you didn't write it down, but you can scroll to the show notes. We're going to go rapid fire. These are fun, easy, lighthearted questions. So it's actually a good time to open up another tab. You can go send Carla a request, jump on the website. Again, it's in the show notes. This is where we just kind of goof off, have fun. They're random questions. Cats or dogs?
Dogs.
Coffee or tea?
Espresso shots.
Espresso, multiple. What's your favorite? What's your favorite espresso beverage?
I'm a pretty big fan of the classic Americano.
Classic Americano. Are you a morning person?
Yes.
Let's do some fun ones. I haven't asked much. Who's your hero or one of them?
Oh, tricky. This is one where there are many like different things I admire about different people, but we're all like really complex. And so I actually struggle with this question because there's never been someone like a mentor or someone who I was just like, I want to be them.
Same.
So I never have an answer to this question.
No, that makes sense. What are you working on right now? We're going to stay in touch with you, support you. What's one major goal you're working on right now?
Well, one of the things is actually, so moving beyond like one-on-one coaching I love and will continue to do, but I think a lot of the ideas that have come out of coaching, working with people, are so useful and important. And so kind of the broader piece of this is to say, how can I make those ideas more accessible generally? And because, again, for people that I've never met, I would love for them.
Take your time. I'm losing my voice today, and I think that you picked up whatever I have. I didn't tell you this beforehand, but I'm feeling like super loopy and sick today, but I didn't want to like jinx the episode, but I somehow managed to give you a cough through Zoom. So I don't know how I did that, but I'm a magician, Carla, so anything's possible.
All right. Thanks for that.
No, not a problem at all.
Ooh. Yeah. Yeah. But I think I'm just really interested to put the ideas out there and like, and see what sticks. And so that's what I'm working on.
I love it. I love it. Anything that we missed, if I were to take out this, I've got a whole lot of post-it notes, so I could take a lot of notes. If you were to give me one more thing to write down to end this episode, and don't be what Ben does and listen to like 20 podcast episodes and not implement anything. If I would write down one thing right now, what do you recommend I write down and quite literally do it right now? Pull over the car.
All right. At the moment, bold, not stupid.
Bold, that's not stupid.
This is a thing I think about a lot. I know we haven't talked about it, but
yeah,
I think that living life boldly feels so good. And again, the point isn't to not do your homework. It's not to be lazy. It's not to be stupid about stuff, but why not live boldly? Mm. And I think that's, you know, some of the sentiment behind like thinking and experiments. So
bold, not stupid, live boldly, be a scientist. And follow up with Carla because it's been fantastic and I appreciate you coming on the show. It's been fun.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Ben. This has been great.
Talk soon. Thanks again for listening to Learn, Speak, Teach, powered by Balbert Marketing, LLC. You need to go subscribe if you haven't yet. This show is completely free. If you gain value from the episode, personally share with a friend and explain your favorite part. Leave us a review on Apple, Google Podcasts, or anywhere you listen to the show. All right. Thanks once more for listening to LST. I am so grateful. Talk to you soon. She later in her career founded Thaxa and ultimately to share her passion for performance science where she, I'm butchering this today. I'm going to do this again.
Totally okay.
Let's ever do it.